I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you, you are here, and that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. It is the top of the week as we are coming to you mid-August. This means that your three faithful correspondents are amid what we sometimes call birthday week. It's very strange to outsiders to realize that Matt, Noel, and I all have birthdays within a very close,
proximity?
Proximity, perfect. Proximity is perfect.
Sure.
We are going to do, we talked about this off air. Folks, conspiracy realist, this week's strange news segment is what we called a disease sandwich. You will see why in just a few minutes. We are going to explore several surprising, disturbing, amazing things, all of which need a little bit more coverage, in our opinion, which is our inspiration for strange news. We're going to look at the activities of a newly famous bear, which I fully support, as well as some other acts of animals fighting the power, which I think we all fully support. Shout out Gladys, the orca. And then we are going to look at the rise of some old diseases that a lot of people in the West thought were done. But before we do any of that, we're returning to one of our ongoing areas of interest. Fungi, mushrooms. They're very dangerous. There are so many that scientists still in 2023 don't know how many species of this life form are out there. But we as a civilization do know they can have dangerous consequences. And there is a story that you might not have heard that, Matt, I got to be honest, reminds me a little bit of the tale Arsenic and Old Lace.
A little bit. Let's go back a ways and start the story on Saturday, July 29th, when a woman named Erin hosted a family get-together at her house in a little town called Leongatha. This is a town in southern Victoria, Australia. It's roughly a two-hour car trip southeast of Melbourne. And in attendance at this party, it was Erin, obviously. She's hosting the party. We got Gail, her mother-in-law, Heather, her mother-in-law's sister, and Dawn and Ian, their respective husbands. So, in total, five adults. Also present at this party, you've got two kids. Those are Aaron's son and daughter. Not in attendance, by the way, is Aaron's husband, Simon, but we will get to that momentarily. So as host of this party, Aaron cooks everybody meals. She makes two of them, one for the adults and one for the kids. And, you know, seems like a great time, family get together. You've probably had many of these in your life. But soon after this get together, four of the five adults present at Aaron's home that day presented symptoms of severe food poisoning. We're talking extreme nausea, stomach pain, expelling of things from both ends, just terrible stuff. A few days later, all four adults who were at that party were admitted to the hospital. And
other than Aaron.
Other than Aaron. Aaron is the fifth adult that was there. She was not admitted to the hospital. She did not come down, at least reportedly, with any kind of food poisoning symptoms. And unfortunately, Gail, her mother-in-law, Heather, her mother-in-law's sister, and Dawn, her, I guess, father-in-law, or at least the husband of her mother-in-law, all passed away. They all died while under medical care at the hospital. And the thought is it's directly tied to whatever food poisoning they were experiencing. And as we report this, the fourth adult, Ian, who is Heather's husband, he remains critically ill, and he is suffering specifically from liver damage. Now, that liver damage is why authorities were very interested in what happened at that party, because liver damage is associated directly with a specific type of mushroom called the death cap. It's one that we've talked about on this show several times. And it's something that the Victoria Department of Health has been signaling danger about since at least April of this year.
Matt, I'm not seeing anywhere what dish was prepared. Did you find that in your looking into this story?
No, this is an active investigation. So there have been several interviews with Aaron by the media, like at her home. They basically accosted her at her home and tried to get that info. But there is an active investigation with Victoria Police. So we're probably not going to find out details like that, at least for a bit. This did happen pretty recently, and the reporting that I'm speaking about came out today. So like right now, Sky News and ABC, the Australian Broadcasting Company, CNN, everybody's covering it. So we'll get more probably really soon. But yeah, what first of all, before we even get into the investigation of this, let's think about it as an investigator. You walk up to, you know, this situation. What are your immediate thoughts?
Well, the first thing, as an investigator, and none of us are investigators, you would say who survived and who encountered this mushroom. The children appear to have no effects. The person preparing the meal appear to have no ill effects at all. And this stuff is very dangerous. So why? That would be your first starting point.
I also would, you know, definitely be interested in what food was prepared. You know, I know a lot of folks in Australia or anywhere like to forage for mushrooms, like morels and things like that. So perhaps if there was a wild mushroom element to the dish, then that would be of interest. But also that would be very suspicious if that dish was different than the one that was served, you know, to everybody. But again, kids don't like mushrooms. So I would want to know if mushrooms were a prominent part of the dish. And then you could make the argument, like, my kid won't eat a mushroom, you know, so that would make sense. But there are questions.
Oh, absolutely. You're right on the money there, guys. That's the way I would feel, too. You're right about the kids don't like mushrooms thing. And again, they were prepared a separate meal that probably didn't include them. We can confirm that mushrooms of some sort were a part of the meal because when just not specifically death cap mushrooms, right?
Oh, of course.
So, yeah, right. So that's part of the investigation that's ongoing. Just trying to figure out where did the mushrooms come from? What type were they and all that good stuff? There's also probably I haven't seen it written anywhere, but there's probably toxicology reports that are being generated and tests being done on the people who have already passed. So we'll likely find out more there.
Matt, did you see something about a dehydrator that was found discarded, which is, that's a little sus that it was discarded, you know? That also implies to me that maybe mushrooms weren't a primary part of the dish, but you say you've seen that it definitely was, because I didn't see that. That's very interesting. Why would you dehydrate mushrooms if you weren't going to try to disguise them?
Well, often mushrooms will be dehydrated in preparation for a dish, depending on what the dish is.
Usually, just to keep them longer, though. You wouldn't necessarily dehydrate them for the dish, because you rehydrate dehydrated mushrooms by cooking them in a liquid that then, you know, makes them kind of reconstitute.
It does depend upon the recipe. And I guess at this point, without spoiling anything, we should do the PSA, which is, unless you are an expert in foraging, unless you're like a hardcore forager, you need to be very careful about which mushrooms you pick up and decide to put in your mouth. One of my favorite lines from a fellow shroom nerd that I know is, he said one time, you know, people can eat any mushrooms they want. It's just some of those mushrooms you can only eat one time.
Hey,
so be careful with that. And Matt, I understand, and I think our fellow conspiracy realists understand from the broad strokes of the story here so far, that we've heard a couple of phrases that should already trip our collective spidey sense. Phrases like toxicology report, phrases like ongoing investigation.
So, yes, active investigation. According to Detective Inspector Dean Thomas with the Victoria Police Homicide Squad, Erin is a suspect. Officially, she is a suspect because of the things we already pointed out. The only adult present at the party that did not get sick. Again, the kids ate a different meal, so they're, you know, pretty much in the clear. Seems very sus, as you said. She was interviewed and released by the authorities, and she has not been charged with the deaths of the three people who've already died and, you know, whatever harming of Ian, the fourth person who is currently in the hospital. They are also looking at it possible accidental poisoning.
And if we're being completely fair, the accidental poisoning idea is quite valid. I would say it's the best beginning point because, again, there are so many mushrooms out there. There's so many that people eat. It's completely plausible that you could have picked the wrong mushroom and you might have thought it looked like something that would go great in a pasta or what have you. And then you could have, you know, you could have had a misstep.
Totally. And I have a couple of friends out in Australia, and maybe these folks are just particularly outdoorsy, but it really does seem like a mega outdoorsy culture there in terms of foraging. And also diversity of plant and wildlife is kind of like out of control in Australia. So it may well have just been a misstep. And while on the one hand, the whole the children got a separate meal thing could be seen as suspect, as a dad with a picky eater, I that makes perfect sense. I have to make a separate meal for my kid almost every time I cook something that I'm interested in. So that's another way of looking at it for sure.
Yeah, and not to sound like an occultist or an alchemist of some sort, but if you know the street name for this, the death cap, you know that it is native to Europe, not native to Australia.
Oh, well, that's a wrench in the works there, mate. Please forgive me, Australian listeners. Please forgive me. That's an issue, huh? That kicks the foraging scenario out the window quite a bit, doesn't it?
Well, not necessarily. These mushrooms are found, not natively, but are found in Australia.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. As of the I think the late 1900s or so, what happened is there was an importation of hardwoods and conifers, and the spores of these life forms were on there. So now the death cap's there, right? Matt, is it true you could plausibly find the death cap out in the wild?
Yeah, that's why the Victoria Health Department put out that statement in April, basically warning everybody, hey, these are here. Be very careful. be very, very careful. Yeah, so it is a possibility that maybe Aaron accidentally had those mushrooms or has, you know, forages for mushrooms, got a hold of them, put them in, or maybe she even got them from somebody else and put them into a dish. Maybe. You guys, we kind of missed something here. We were talking about the dehydrator. Some of the more recent reporting states that investigators have recovered a dehydrator that you could dehydrate mushrooms or any other thing in. It was found in, well, the reporting says it was found in a tip, which is, I believe, slang for like a place where trash is dumped, right?
Mm-hmm. Like a dumpster. I guess like a street Kirby bin kind of thing, right?
Yeah. I don't know. There's no information about where the tip was, where, you know, and the circumstances that they found it, but it was discovered and recovered by authorities. So, you know, I guess they'll do some testing on that thing and see if it actually had death cap mushrooms in it, unless it has been thoroughly cleansed. The big question then becomes, well, maybe this is foul play of some sort. And if it is, what would be the motive for something like this? And that's where you get to one of the primary questions being asked by media outlets from Australia to the United States, which is, where was Aaron's husband, Simon? Why was he not there? Both of his parents were there, and both of his parents passed away. What are the circumstances between Aaron and Simon? What is their relationship like? Well, according to D.I. Thomas, which is something I've always wanted to say, D.I. or D.C.I., yeah. Somebody, you know, thanks, Luther, got that in my head. But D.I. Thomas described the relationship between Aaron and Simon as being, quote, separated, but also, quote, amicable. So maybe everything's fine there. There's nothing to see, but it does seem a bit strange. Several sources close to the investigation, as well as I think family members, maybe people close to the family, according to The Sun, have stated that Aaron invited Simon, they call him her estranged husband, Simon, mm-hmm. to join the parents at this lunch, right? But he apparently pulled out right at the last minute, which seems, you know, maybe if it's a couple that's fighting there, he just pulled out because he felt uncomfortable. It didn't want to go. That's me speculating. But it is a bit weird that it was basically a lunch for his family. He wasn't there and they all end up getting sick and they're having, you know, troubles within their relationship. It's a bit strange.
I agree. It is strange. I also will say, in the spirit of giving someone the benefit of the doubt, who, if in the case that this was an accident, is going through hellish emotional time right now, mm-hmm. and being, you know, accused of such things,
yeah, it's horrible.
Locally, people coming to the house, you know, asking questions, all of that stuff, impossible to grieve properly and all of that. So just putting that out there, that we are coming at this from a place of empathy and that it's just, these are questions that are being asked. This is an unusual situation, but, you know, obviously given this is an accident, our hearts are, you know, with this woman.
With everybody involved. Everybody. And there will be more surely to come. We just thought it was an interesting case, I guess, to look into. You don't hear often about a large number of people being poisoned unless it's some kind of accident with, you know, a packer of produce or meat or something where listeria or, you know, one of these other diseases kind of gets out. And we will keep our eyes on this. We'll take a break now, hear a word from our sponsor, and we'll be right back.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
This episode is brought to you by Terminix.
Terminix can't help you solve the world's biggest mysteries or take on alien life.
At least not the ones you're thinking of. But they can help take care of pesky invaders in your home.
Like the ants in your kitchen, the roaches under your sink, and the termites in the walls.
Because when pests show up, so does Terminix.
No matter what type of pest it is, they can Terminix it fast with personalized pest care that puts you in control.
Their expertly trained technicians may not know true crime, but they know their local pest pressures.
And with customized plans tailored to your specific situation, you get everything you need to not just get pests out, but keep them out for good.
Between their speedy service, caring technicians, and over 95 years of experience, it's no mystery why they're trusted by homes and businesses everywhere.
So if you have a pest problem, don't stress it. Terminix it.
Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today.
That's TERMINIX.com to book online today.
And we've returned with another piece of strange news. This one a bit on the lighter side. It goes in line with some stories that we've been talking about lately. That you may have noticed a bit of a backlash from the animal kingdom, you know, as the seas boil and the earth becomes scorched. And also just, you know, humans generally being pretty awful. But this one's kind of fun because you can't help when you hear a headline like fugitive burglar bear captured in California. The alliteration alone is going to tickle you pink. But the idea of a burglar bear captured, was this a serial offender? What was he pilfering? Was it picnic baskets? We don't know. We'll probably never know exactly what the bear pilfered. What we do know is that this bear, a 500-pound bear known to residents of the Lake Tahoe area as Hank the Tank, is said to have or believed to have broken into more than 20 homes in the Lake Tahoe area since 2022. And Hank, who is in fact a female bear, is registered with the Wildlife Service as Bear 64F, is currently being moved to a wildlife sanctuary in Colorado. The bear was actually apprehended along with her three cubs. So, you know, you hear about you rent a cabin or something and you'll occasionally see like locks on the trash cans outside and stuff. And so you hear about there's bears. These creatures are curious and they are looking for food often. And they, you know, you don't often hear of people being mauled or you know, injured in any way by bears, but they certainly can mess up your campsite. You know, you're supposed to hang your trash in the trees and all of that stuff. You know, there's little precautions that go into mitigating bear encounters, let's just call them. But this one really takes the cake. It also turns out that there were originally this bear was being associated with, I think, more than 100 incidents of reported bear sightings. Let's see, you know, these types of altercations involving homes. But it appears that Hank was being lumped in with the activities of some other mischievous rascally bears. So Hank wasn't guilty of all the things that were being thrown out there. But I don't know, you guys. How does this hit you initially, especially when, you know, we're looking at all of these things like orcas attacking boats, attacking yachts and things like that? Like, is this part of the animal kingdom revolting against its human interlopers, or is it just a coincidence?
Yeah, there's
This has been a fascination of mine of late. I have become strange when it comes to the rise in stories of quote-unquote animal aggression. There's an otter who has been absconding with surfboards in California. There's a bear who just broke out of an airplane in Iraq. Matt, you sent an awesome story, or a disturbing story, about a bear in our group chat earlier. We see what appears to be a rise in stories of animals fighting the human power. I've been fascinated by this. I think a lot of people have. And a big part of it, Noel, probably goes down to what wildlife experts are saying about Hank the Tank. They're saying it's not her fault. She's a bear, not a human supervillain. People are further encroaching upon wildlife. Climate change is driving animals out of their usual habitats, and people aren't securing things like their trash bins, and people aren't securing entryways and things like that. I've just got to be honest, even since before Gladys the Orca, I've been team animal for a long, long time. I mean, that's my take. You can't blame a bear for trying to be a bear, right?
Well, you can blame a bear for a B&E. My advice to 64F is don't bring your cubs to a B&E, okay?
that's just irresponsible parenting right there. At least, you know, leave them in the den. But you know, it's funny. It makes me think of the movie 12 Monkeys. You know how in like the post-apocalyptic kind of world, that's, or at least what leads up to it. Don't they release like the kind of contingent of freedom fighters or rebels or whatever? They release a bunch of animals like from the zoo and stuff, and like in the weird future decimated planet world, there are like lions and tigers and stuff roaming, you know, free. This feels a little 12 Monkeys-ish to me, you know, this idea of these animals that are kind of revolting. I do think it's interesting that the governor of Colorado, by the way, Jared Polls, suggested that Hank should have been named Henrietta the Tank. That's very cute, Governor Jared Polis. Also, by the way, this is the first one I've seen on the X social media platform, formerly known as Twitter. Just come on, Elon, stop trying to make X happen. It's not happening. Nobody's going for it. But yeah, I think it's interesting. In many ways, these type of situations usually involve the animal being euthanized. But I guess because of all the press surrounding it, and because Hank, nay Henrietta, were just so much smarter than the average bear, that they're being transported to a wildlife preserve to live out their, you know, natural life instead of being, you know, put down. And unfortunately, though, the cubs are being separated from the mother, which seems like a bummer. That seems like a heartbreaking thing, because we do know that animals do know they're young and they are affected when they're, you know, separated from them. And this seems like a punishment in and of itself, but I don't know the particulars about why, what facilities are more suitable. But yeah, Hank is going to get a health check and then be taken to a wildlife animal sanctuary in Springfield, Colorado. And again, the governor was like welcoming Hank with open arms, but it is sort of a cute PR-y type story in that respect. But I think it points to something much larger, like what Ben is describing, which I completely agree with. I'm not being facetious when I say I do think this stuff is real. The animals are fed up. they're mad as hell. They're not going to take it anymore.
Yeah. They're just, you know, we talk about it all the time. They're being encroached on more and more, right? Well, just in the case of where I live, in like about 45 minutes north of where you guys are, there's a black bear that lives in the little wooded area right by my house. And it's been caught on camera right in front of my house several times around trash day. So it makes sense, right? It's a bear that's living close by. There is a lot of trash that can be smelled from pretty far away, and it roams through and tries to find some food. Bear's not doing anything wrong, just trying to find some food.
And I overestimated the number earlier about the total number of incidents. It was 40 break-ins total, only 21 of which were DNA confirmed to have been committed by Hank. So we know at least two other large bears were involved. But Hank did the work of two bears all on our own.
That's 500 bears total, right? Estimated in the area, in the Tahoe area?
Of correct, yes, that's right. Yeah, of the population, yes, correct. So it's weird, right? Because it's on the one hand, it's funny, and you can see the reporting taking that stance, and the governor making it a thing, and like, yeah, we're welcoming this bear. We're not going to kill it because you guys know too much, and it wouldn't be a good look. But these incidents are not like bears that have gone mad. You know, it's our fault, kind of. You know. So it's sad in its own way as well, especially when you consider that Hank's being separated from her cubs. So a little bit less of a totally cute story than I thought, now that I think about it in totality. Well,
there is a lighthearted part to it, Noel, or a good news part, which is that no one was injured.
That's right.
By Hank the Tank, because the most dangerous way to encounter a bear is to encounter a female bear with cubs. That is known. It is well established. The fact that Hank, or 64F, as the government wishes to call her, is going around with her kids means that someone could have easily died. And you know what? Davy Crockett stories aside, if you were listening to this show and you were a human being, the odds of you PvPing a bear are very low. You should just not be in that situation if you can help it.
Mm-hmm. And I believe it is true that you are supposed to play dead, right? That's not just like a joke, because
depending on the species.
Yeah, you shouldn't run, because they're going to be faster than you. They will overtake you, and they can climb trees. So, depending on the species, I believe playing dead is a pretty decent move.
Except for the polar bears.
Yeah, and the black bears in question here, at least the going thing in North Georgia, is to make yourself big and be really loud and scary, basically, to
just
the bear.
Just be inconvenient. Oh. Look like it cost more calories to try to eat you than they will get from eating you. Mm-hmm. Because black bears are usually going to be less likely to engage in that regard. If you are ever in the wild with a actually, you know what? If you're in the wild with most bears, except for, and I can't emphasize this enough, except for polar bears, they don't want to hang out with you. You're not easy to eat, okay? They're responding to threats if they feel like you are a threat. Now, if you are in a situation with a polar bear, I'm just going to say it. I know gun rights are a whole sensitive thing, but if you are going to survive a situation with a polar bear, you need to be strapped. In Svalbard Island, one of the only places in the EU where you don't need a visa to live, the residents of that place cannot leave Longyearbyen, the main town, without a rifle because of the polar bears. That is a true story. But other than polar bears, yeah.
All right. Well, I think this is it for this one for today. I'm glad ultimately everyone came out of this unscathed, except for the planet Earth. But that's a story for another day. Let's take a quick break. We're going to hear a word from our sponsor, and then we'll be back with a little bit more strange news.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
This episode is brought to you by Terminix.
Terminix can't help you solve the world's biggest mysteries or take on alien life.
At least not the ones you're thinking of. But they can help take care of pesky invaders in your home.
Like the ants in your kitchen, the roaches under your sink, and the termites in the walls.
Because when pests show up, so does Terminix.
No matter what type of pest it is, they can Terminix it fast with personalized pest care that puts you in control.
Their expertly trained technicians may not know true crime, but they know their local pest pressures.
And with customized plans tailored to your specific situation, you get everything you need to not just get pests out, but keep them out for good.
Between their speedy service, caring technicians, and over 95 years of experience, it's no mystery why they're trusted by homes and businesses everywhere.
So if you have a pest problem, don't stress it. Terminix it.
Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today.
That's TERMINIX.com to book online today.
And we have returned with a gift that no one asked for. Perhaps coming to your neck of the global woods. If you live in Central Florida, folks, as you know, you've already got many, many things to worry about in that part of the world. Rising sea levels, the heat is just cartoonishly offensive. One thing you might not have had on your bingo card, leprosy. So leprosy, we all remember leprosy, right? From the Bible.
Right.
That's, I think it's fair to say for most people in the West, leprosy is something that feels historic, right? Like when's the last time you got a call from an ex and they said, hey, I just want you to know I have leprosy. You should get checked.
Yeah, for sure. Historic, highly contagious, that which is part of, I think, where I guess the panic around it came. And also, you know, some really brutal situations where lepers were rounded up and put, you know, on colonies, oftentimes only taken care of by, you know, monks and folks like that and nuns who were the only ones who weren't afraid, I guess, perhaps because they felt they were protected by the power of Christ.
By divinity. Yeah. And they were the people suffering from leprosy, also known as Hansen's disease, were historically isolated because it is an infectious disease. It is caused by bacteria. I think a lot of people, maybe especially younger people in the West, might think of leprosy the way you think of the bubonic plague. Just because it does cause physical degradation, but leprosy is curable with some multi-drug therapy. Leprosy is still around today. The majority of cases come from Southeast Asia, but the humble armadillo here in the United States is also a transmitter of leprosy, which is a shame because I always felt like armadillos got the short end of the stick anyway, evolutionarily. So here's a story that came to us via Science Alert, via the CDC. It should be more widely reported. Just this August, a 54-year-old man in Florida was diagnosed with leprosy, and it turns out that he is one of, this man who's still not identified, of course, is one of the many cases of leprosy. There is an explosion of leprosy cases in the southern U.S. since 2000. So for more than two decades, leprosy has been on the rise in the Southeast, and reported cases of leprosy have more than doubled in the Southeast in particular. Central Florida alone, not even the whole of Florida, Central Florida alone accounts for almost one-fifth of U.S. cases of leprosy. And if you look at the people we love to go to for this stuff, the experts, you know, the CDC, the dermatologist, the pathologist, everyone, They are saying that leprosy has now become endemic in the southeastern United States. And the scary part, no one's sure why. No one's sure why leprosy has become so popular in Central Florida. It's so hot right now, leprosy.
How many cases are we talking?
Well, that's a good question, Matt. There were about 150 cases reported baseline of leprosy in the U.S. each year. However, the number has been doubling at an unexpected rate. This is an explosion of leprosy, and by the, as we know, the best way to try to address this, the best way to figure out how to combat it, is to isolate the cause. Once we know what is causing this, we will know how to combat it, how to address it, how to get in front of it. But if you look at it now, what you're going to see is that in 2020, there were 159 cases reported nationwide, all across the United States. So that'd be mainly Central Florida and Texas, we could assume, right? Because armadillo, you think of Texas, you think of the South and Texas in particular. But Central Florida right now is 81% of cases in Florida of leprosy. And that means it's 1 out of 5 leprosy cases in the United States. No one is sure why. We know the 9-banded armadillo, which to be fair, isn't just in Texas. But when the CDC and when investigators are talking with people about this, what they're seeing is that easily the majority of these new leprosy cases, they've never seen an armadillo. They haven't touched one. They haven't petted one. They haven't eaten armadillo jerky or anything like that, which I don't even know is a thing, but I'd try it.
It's already pretty jerky, pre-jerked. Yeah.
Is there travel involved with those cases? Like they went somewhere and came back with leprosy?
Zero. Good question, Matt. No foreign travel, as far as we can tell.
And the good news, though, I guess, is that it is not. It was never necessarily a death sentence, but it can be treated, and these aren't like advanced, you know, cases that are life threatening, correct? It's just unusual more than anything, right?
Right. Yeah. So endemic, which can be a scary word to hear. Endemic means that there is a normalized, regular level of a disease in a region, but not necessarily that rates are climbing. If you look at, and we have to caveat this carefully, if you look at the current speculation, then one of the big guesses regards climate change. One of the big guesses regards the idea that the environment is changing such that the factor or the ways in which leprosy can transmit, you know, it's like when a small town gets big and it used to have a 2-lane road going into town, and now all of a sudden the road is 3 lanes. Now it's 4 lanes. It's easier to move cars. Cars in this case are leprosy, and diseases like that. It's easier for them to travel. And that seems to be what happens. Now, luckily, luckily Florida itself is in no danger of becoming a quote unquote leper colony. But we have to be aware of the tremendous misconceptions regarding this condition. You know, you don't have to touch an armadillo to get leprosy. You don't have to travel abroad and return to get leprosy.
You know what? Something I'm just learning from the sources you put in the doc here, Ben. In my head, I always thought leprosy was something you contracted from somebody else through touching the skin or the affected areas on a person's body. According to the CDC and the things you posted here, Ben, it is you contract it through the ways you would get any other sickness, basically, from people, through sneezing,
droplets
from the mouth and all that, the same way you would COVID or something.
See, I was woefully ignorant to that as well. I kind of, and we've talked about this. I kind of thought that you could It could be excreted through the skin. That's not, it can't at all.
Well, maybe it's just the most common ways, at least it says here, to contract it is the way, sure. Again, through the
Someone droplets. Sneezes on their hand, you shake their hand, you rub your eyes, or you pick something out of your teeth with your finger. That could be a vector. But here's the insidious part. This is where it becomes a fascinating case for investigation. And this is where we want your help, fellow conspiracy realists. Leprosy is a slow game, okay? It's not like COVID. It doesn't develop quickly. Leprosy, the bacteria that creates it, it grows extremely slowly. Depending upon the type of infection, it can take up to 20 years for you as a leprosy patient to develop symptoms, to get the rashes, the ulcers, the lesions, all the nasty stuff, like the weird numb blotches on your skin. So this means, especially given the age of the patient who triggered a lot of this reporting, shout out to Science Alert, Claire Watson, August 2nd, 2023. This means that this guy, who is 54 years old in Florida, we don't know how long he had this until he went in to get diagnosed. You can incubate this stuff, which means that logically speaking, it is quite possible that there's a whole heap of infections. There's a whole heap of people suffering from leprosy, and we might not know it for a certain time horizon.
Delay in reporting, always an issue with this kind of stuff. And yeah, I'd forgotten about that. It's almost like a herpes simplex virus that can lay dormant for a very, very long time after you've contracted it. So you might not get tested right away, and therefore it's a lot easier to spread, you know, because you can still, I believe, it's less likely that you would pass it on if you're not having an outbreak, but you still can pass it while it's dormant, right?
Yeah. I mean, okay, so the bacteria itself, right? It can come in and hide out. You know, it can infiltrate your body's system. The technical name is, I believe, Mycobacterium leprae, L-E-P-R-A-E. And it attacks the nerves under your skin. So you're not going to see the serious symptoms for quite some time, to the point where I believe a lot of people get diagnosed with this when they go to a dermatologist and say, hey, doc, what's this weird thing? They probably assume it's an allergic reaction of some sort because they felt fine and fit as a fiddle for quite some time. All this to say, what we are seeing is a return of diseases and conditions that were once thought to be relatively contained. I won't say cured, but relatively contained. Malaria is also on the rise in unexpected areas. If you want to learn more about this, please do check out the CDC website. I know that the CDC is an imperfect entity. We all know that, but they are working around the clock to save lives. You will find information not just about leprosy in Florida and in the Southeast overall, but you will also find information about locally acquired malaria cases identified in the United States. That comes to us from June of this year. It looks like Florida and Texas are also becoming home to previously, well, I won't say unprecedented because there used to be a lot of malaria, but unexpected levels of malaria. And this is not to dig on Florida. Obviously, we're fans. We love going to Disney World. I think Noel just went there a little while ago. Disneyland is the
Disney
one in California.
World. Yeah, went to the Florida one. Didn't catch leprosy that I know of. Haven't been tested.
No, geez, give it 20 incubated. Years. No, you're exactly. Fine. You're fine.
I hope you know. So. I do want to cop to and apologize because it's true. I'm looking it up and it's saying you really can't catch it by sitting next to somebody. You can't catch it by casual skin contact. And I think my perception of it was being affected by a lot of the tropes of it throughout history. And I kind of feel like an idiot, like totally out of touch. And but it just goes to show how things like that are easy to do with just, you know, and we research stuff like this all the time. And yet I was still kind of taken in by that whole narrative of like the leper colony and, you know, the idea of people being, you know, you can't touch them. And that's just not true. So I just think, you know, it's always, this is a good teachable moment for everyone to always give a second look at things that you think you understand, especially when it involves like human beings, you know, and the way we perceive human beings that are struggling with something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we'll end it by saying this. There's excellent scholarship by Dr. Rajiv Nathoo, Nathoo. You can hear several interviews with this person. And one thing Dr. Nathoo points out that blew my mind is that of those 80% of all U.S. leprosy cases that are coming from Florida by itself, 20% are coming from that one single region, Central Florida. Something is or was in Central Florida giving people leprosy, and it's just now being understood. It's scary because we don't know what is causing it. And if you want to fix something, you have to know the origin of the problem. But again, to end on a good note, leprosy is treatable. It's no longer a death sentence, obviously. You take a multi-drug regimen for several months, and there's more than one kind of leprosy. So your mileage may vary, but taking this treatment can improve your quality of life. It can also reduce your likelihood of spreading this disease. And perhaps the best news, which might also surprise us, is that 95% of people are not susceptible to leprosy because there is an innate immunity to this bacteria baked into your DNA. Because leprosy rocked the human population several times in the past. So it's good news, but it's something to keep an eye on, and it's something we need to be aware of when we're seeing the changing climate and how it affects the ways in which infections now behave. So everybody stay safe out there. We're going to call it today. This might be a little bit of a short one, but we feel like it is very packed with strange news. Let us know your stories of animals fighting against the system. Shout out to my favorite otter, of course. And let us know what you think about this case with death cap mushrooms in Australia. And most importantly, join us on the show. We'd love to hear from you. We try to be easy to find online.
Correct. You can find us at the handle Conspiracy Stuff on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. That's what it's called. You can also find us at the handle Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram and TikTok.
Do you like using your phone? Call 1-833-STDWYTK. It's our voicemail system. When you call, please give yourself a cool nickname and let us know if we can use your message and voice on the air. If you got more to say than can fit in that 3 minutes, why not instead send us a good old-fashioned email? We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Red. Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.